Hi, I'm Akoya Jumpfy, and this is the Circle IG Live Sessions Lockdown Special Extravaganza.
Why are all your titles like that? In that game show, movie, game thing, TV quiz thing. And now they're...
Because I'm always trying to make sure people get the point.
So
lengthy title. Yo, Leon. Hi.
How you doing? You good?
I'm good. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Oh, sorry, my bad. Hi, guys. Leon Main, your favourite local carpenter, you know?
And I'm your favourite plagiarist. That's as described by Leon. Yes, why are we here, Leon? What are we doing? Why are we here?
So last year, we recorded a group of lockdown episodes with some incredible talent. And we thought we'd bring that series to you guys on the podcast. This was done over IG, so the format's a little bit different. Namely, that I'm not there. Tears. I know you guys miss me, but don't worry, I'll be back in like, what, 6 more episodes? Mm-hmm. You guys can hold out just about. And yeah, every week we've been speaking to some incredible guests. Who is our guest this week?
The wonderful, phenomenal, BAFTA award winning, stunning, talented actress, and I think she's going to be a writer and producer, as they do, Naomi Aki. Babes, she's wonderful. Had a great chat with her, gave us much joke. And yeah, man, we spoke to Naomi Aki.
Girl,
how you doing?
Listen, I put on makeup for the first time today.
Are you kidding? Well, to be fair, why am I saying, am I kidding? I'm literally putting on makeup today as well. I look tired.
Oh, girl, what's on my face on the phone camera? I was just like, oh no, I can't.
It's gotta
be fresh. I know it's like natural and stuff, but I was just like, let's just give a glow. Let's just get a little sign.
Now, what people fail to realise is natural look is not exactly entirely natural.
Never
hey, guys, that's the truth.
No. Yeah. I'd be scaring a lot of people right now if they saw
I cannot believe that. I will not. I refuse to believe that. So how you doing, girl?
You know what? It's definitely like ups and downs, trial and error.
Yeah, sure.
There's good days and there's bad days. But all in all, I'm doing good. I'm making good discoveries. I'm making stuff.
What are you making?
Well, I'm actually writing my first pilot. Well, I've written my first pilot, yeah. And I'm like just in the process of getting it into its next draft and stuff like that with some really cool people. So, yeah.
Are you going to be annoying and say you can't talk about it?
I have to, because I've signed a contract and stuff, I have to be a little bit annoying. But I will say it's got a black female lead, obvs, and we're stepping into some untread territory. I'm proper excited.
Is that untread territory for black female lead, or is it the genre?
I think the genre. Oh gosh, okay. It's bad. Like it's just a really cool concept that kind of popped into my head, and I feel like it's something that we haven't seen a black female explore yet. So I think like I'm feeling good about it.
I'm not going to get into trouble with your contract because I can't give you any contract that's going to let you go anywhere. So I'll keep them. So I'm just going to break down how this is going to work. So I'm just going to just get into your life now. And then we're going to have our quiz time. You've got to be Damson Idris. You have to be Damson Idris. You became my arch nemesis. Yeah, please beat him. Then we're going to do questions from the audience. The last thing we're going to do is the process, which is a great thing that Leon and I created. And guys who are watching and listening and commenting, do you know that Naomi, what makes her so freaking special is that she's a Scorpio?
No, I'm not. You know what's so funny is that Wikipedia got my birthday wrong. I'm so
you know, do you know, look, can I just say something? I now actually want to end the whole live. Because you know I was going to do a whole bit about I'm a Scorpio, she's a Scorpio, we're best friends.
I'm a Scorpio. Girl, I'm sorry, I'm a Leo. Yeah.
Hold on,
but
let's
we're
go
still best friends, girl. We got this.
No, we're still best friends. My mum's a Leo, so and we get on. So, all right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm going to have to call out Wikipedia for messing up my facts. I was so confident. This is so upsetting.
I'm so sorry. You know what's so funny? Like, it hit, like, I don't know what date they've put, but, like, on that date, I'll get, like, bare happy birthdays. And I'm like, yo, my birthday's, like, in August. Like,
it literally says, born 2nd of November, I mean, it's out there, 1992. You don't have to give us the year if that's not the real year.
That's not even the real year either. I am a little bit older than that, but we won't tell anybody.
Okay, Let's go for your Wikipedia and correct it then. So were you, is it true you were born in Walthamstow, London?
Yes.
Do you, are you a very typical Walthamstonian? Is that the word?
I don't know what a typical Walthamstonian is, but I did see Walthamstow change a lot. Because when over we the moved time. There, it was like rough, nothing to do. And now there's like yummy mummies everywhere and there's nice restaurants.
It's so, Walthamstow is East London, right?
East London.
So, okay, are you a typical East Londoner?
Yeah.
I don't know what, you know. So, okay. So, did your dad work for Transport for London?
Yeah.
Does he still work for Transport for London?
No, he's retired now. My dad's retired.
Yeah. So they didn't call him back? You know, with the TfL nonsense, they didn't try calling him back to work?
No, because he actually worked in the offices as a trainer for the...
Oh, okay, cool.
And stuff like that. But now he's, like, on his next thing. He's starting his new business. And listen, my dad don't stop. He's, like, doing kind of holistic medicine.
Okay.
So, like, I get basically free life coaching, which I... always need all the time.
You're from Grenada?
Yes.
Are you a typical Grenadian?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
I just feel like, what's a typical Grenadian? Okay, you know what the typical West Indian thing is to do? Is to like call things a thing by its sound. So my family, for instance, came up with this thing. You know when a man has a receding hairline? We call it a fjups. Because
the hair's literally going short.
Right, sorry for all the men who might be watching, but he's a fjups. Loud. Family loud, talk through movies. I feel like that's a West Indian thing. Nice food, can always cook up a good food. Vibes are always nice until it's not. Yeah, man. I feel like I'm... But I've never been to Grenada, though. I know.
Naomi, how come?
Because when I was younger, my parents always went for funerals and stuff, and I was too young.
Okay, I get you.
And then now I'm older, I just didn't have the money. And then when I had the money, I didn't have the time. I'm actually going to plan, once obviously all this calms down, I'm going to do it because I actually really want to write a piece about West Indian women, because I feel like that's like, there's some really cool stories that can be told. I've started reading some books on it and trying to piece something together.
So the pilot that you're writing is set in Grenada?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, damn.
Set in London. Set in London.
Okay, trying to get some stuff out of there. it's very important to go back home, I think, as black people.
It's a big thing. It actually, like, when I think about how I attach to identity and stuff, you know, at the moment, it's definitely more of a, I attach to being a Londoner more than I attach to being from an island. And I think that's really important in my idea of identity and, you know, It would be nice to feel patriotic, and I certainly don't feel very patriotic about the country that I was born in.
I hear you.
You know?
Yeah.
Put it out there.
We get that. I hear that.
Yeah.
I think it is that sense of displacement when you need to have touched ground from where you're from. It just helps us as black folks or people that are from another, have another heritage. It just helps focus on who, centralise who you are.
Absolutely. It feels like a spiritual thing, like an alignment.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think for a while I took that for granted, but as I get older, I feel like that's actually an important thing for me to look at.
Okay, so let's back to the thing. So that's into holistic stuff. So does that mean you're spiritual and holistic and you're natural and you only eat herbs and stuff?
No, I'm somewhere in between. I definitely like feel like I'm making strides in my... holistic practices. I feel like that's actually one of the things that's like my grounding point in this time. Like, so I'm doing way more tarot than I've ever done before. I'm meditating every day. Yeah, so like things that I've always wanted to really put in place that now I kind of feel the pressure to put in place because I don't know how I would really manage without those things as like some sort of guidance, you know?
So, you know, because black people are quite spiritual and we either lean towards organised religion or it is holistic and more spiritual side of things. Was there any conflict growing up? Was your family ever religious, like from the typical traditional religions?
Yeah.
And how did that break away? How did that change?
So my dad and my mum were both brought up in the same church, Seventh-day Adventist in like Hampstead area. And it came to a point, for some reason, they left. And that's when my dad and my mum went into some more like Eastern practices. So they started to look at meditation and like different forms of like yoga and stuff like that. And so then our household just naturally kind of swayed into that. My dad's been doing tarot for as long as I can remember. And it's like, I'm aware that it kind of can look like a juju thing or something that is a bit more like telling the future and stuff. And actually, it's far more spiritual than that. And it feels like something that you can look at as like a, you can look at the images as like archetypes. It's actually like super helpful. It's helping me to ground my process in different aspects of my life and put it down on paper.
And it's not always times of stress, but when do you lean on this or lean on these teachings and learnings? What kind of times do you lean on those things?
I think in times when I have to make decisions about something, and in times when there's a conflict, there's an inner conflict, especially. So right now, I think for anyone who's like a freelance worker out here, you work so hard. And, at the beginning of this year, I had like two projects that I was going to be doing, and I was like, wow, look, Nay's on a roll. And then suddenly it's all gone. And you're left with you. And what does it actually mean when you're left with you? So I have to now do the things that I was putting off, which is get to know and be okay with just being me without the acting right now, without anything to like do. And that's challenging. I'm realizing that's really hard for me to separate my identity of my acting and what I do in that realm to who I am. They're two separate things, but it's quite hard to...
I think, especially in our line of work, anyone's line of work, you introduce yourself with a career, like, this is my name, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And then that becomes, this is my name, this is what I do. But actually, the same thing, I literally said the same thing. Who am I when all the jobs and all the work has stopped?
Who am I?
And I've got the British Blacklist here, I'm a queer here, like, who am I? What do I do? So it's interesting that that you actually went through the same thing, and I was recognising.
And it feels like a challenge to, like, do I like me?
Yeah.
Do I actually like me, and do I, if I don't, or if there's aspects that I don't like, what can I do right now to try and access a better version of myself? Which is hard work, mate. I'm not going to lie to you, girl. Every other day, if not every single day, a little tear is dropping from my eye.
I hear you.
You know, it's funny because like, I feel like the kind of achieving stuff, even all last year when the Star Wars happened and the end of the effing world and all of this big stuff, actually, could I say it made me feel fulfilled? Not really.
And that
was a big thing for me of going, oh my gosh.
That's not it. Yeah.
I was proud of those things. I was so happy to be there, but like, wow. Yeah.
I think that's the expectation, I suppose, because something as big as Star Wars, which, first, can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah. That was...
Because you played Janna.
So as an actor, you go through something called pilot season and bare auditions, all of them, like chock-a-block, four a day.
Did you fly out to LA that thing, or did it from here?
I was here and I was self-taping all the time. And then this one came in, untitled Disney project. And my agents were just like, oh, by the way, we think it's Star Wars. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Because at that point, I was so tired. I was working at my hustle job as like a barmaid. I was like, I can't do all of these things at the same time, and if Disney they're gonna they want me to job. And then lo and behold, like 3 weeks later, I was like, I'm in Star Wars.
It's for real. Only 3 weeks, so you sent your tape and that was it.
So no, I sent the tape, and then there was about a month, maybe even two, of nothing. So then I thought, oh, it's not a thing. And then I got a recall like from then on 3 weeks, and it was like, okay, you're in.
Did you know your character from the script that you auditioned? No. It was a generic kind of thing. What did you have to do in your self-tape? Like,
pretend scripts all the time.
Oh my God.
Even when it was like my chem read with John, like pretend. It was only about 2 weeks into pre-production that I sat down with JJ at Pinewood, and he told me the story of my character, and I was like, wow, okay, cool, now I know what I'm doing. And then it was about a month after that I read the script.
You see, when John lost his script, did you call him and say,
hey. And I didn't know who that was as well, and the thing is, like, John plays it so cool. Like, he was just like, yeah, man, but what are they going to do? And it's, like, true. They can't fire you. But, like, I don't feel like that's a good, like, tick by your name.
Yeah.
If I had, I was I didn't even tell anybody I was in it until it came out. The only person who knew was my dad and my sister, like, a week before it came out. I was afraid the whole time.
Time to say anything,
I need Disney to hire me again. Like, I want to stay in their good books. And they're, like, formidable, man.
For those of you who don't know, John Boyega left his script in a hotel room by mistake for the latest Star Wars, and a cleaner picked it up and was about to sell it, but then they found it and they bought it back off them.
Yeah.
I don't think they really realised the levels of the script that they had in their possessions. Listen, I would have been mortgaging my house on that script, man.
And they only sold it, I think they were trying to sell it for something like 60 quid. The way my heart would have been out of my chest, I don't think I would have been able to handle it.
Mm. Okay, so tell everybody about your character in a nutshell.
I guess, you know what, the film's out, so I'm still asking permission whether I can tell the story, innit?
No, if anyone hasn't seen it, come on now. It was out last year.
I'm so sorry, but I mean... basically, you find out that she was an ex-stormtrooper, just like Finn, and they fight together, and then at the end, there's this whole question of, like, who is she to Lando? Who is she to Lando? And that's where her story ends.
I don't believe you, though. I believe, my prediction, I think there needs to be anyway. There's going to be a whole venture into the black tribes of Star Wars.
Listen,
I mean, to be fair, and I feel like you're Lando's niece or granddaughter or something, and you and Finn, because you and Finn had a kind of chemistry in the film.
And we were trying to push
it. And there's a vibe.
We were trying to push it. Like, there was moments we'd be like, JJ, can we just try something out? Because we were just like, what would it be with, like, a black-on-black love in a Star Wars? Like,
imagine
that for a second. Like, the loving of the melanins coming together. What would that be?
Exactly.
So me and John were trying to push it. But, you know, there was a story beforehand about how Finn fell apart about rape. So I tried to, like, finagle my way in. But, you know, it's only so much you can do.
Obviously, that was a wrap-up story. So, I know you can't say no. I don't even know why I'm going to bother asking these questions. Do you know if there's any more?
I don't know.
Will we see more of Janna? Will we see more of Janna anywhere?
I don't know. I hope so.
Okay.
That's all. I promise you. I don't
as
know.
Your best friend, and as we're talking in confidence,
girl,
in a private room with no one watching.
Watch my eye. I can't,
no one's listening. It's just me and you. I feel like you could tell me there's a show.
You know what? I feel like if there was, like, it felt like when the film came out, and it was really lovely to see, like, people being like, oh, we want to see more of Janna, and that felt great.
Yeah.
You know, you get a taster of Janna, but there's so much more that we could see that I feel like could beef out her character and tell more of her story. So I feel like it's just down to people. If the need is there, if the want is there, maybe Disney will listen.
And another thing I wanted to say, because you made a point to have, like, your hair was natural.
Yeah.
And was that a discussion?
Big discussion. I mean, like, we still found, like, a middle ground. Like, there were... I look back on that now, and I actually wish I had gone with tighter curls, actually. So we had tried loads of wigs. Some of them were... I called one a Moana, like, it would come like I was, like, trying to make me look like Polynesian or something.
Yeah.
Definitely, like, discussions, I guess, that, like... I remember at one point it being, like... Oh, you know, it could be kind of like, you know, you're racially ambiguous. And I was like...
So you actually said those words?
Yeah. Wow. I am a black woman. My dad is black. My mum is black. Now, granted, I'm fair-skinned, but I'm black.
Yeah,
and I don't want... I never do want to kind of mix those two things together. Like, it's important that we have that. I feel like and that's why I feel like I could have gone further with the hair, to be honest, and done something that's more natural to my hair. But at the time, you know, I think, if I'm being really honest, I still felt the kind of pressure to...
I was going to say, because you're in a space, so that's a big... I mean, that's your biggest feature project yet, right?
Yeah,
in your career.
Yeah.
So the fact that you even had the strength to speak up... I know a lot of creatives, and especially young... I'm going to say young and new, because you've done work before, but in that space... I don't even me being as confident as I am. I don't know if I'd have the confidence. I'd be like, yes, I'll put the Naomi wig on.
Just let me help you.
Yeah, just let me.
Just please don't
I will me. Put on the wig. I'll do the contouring so my nose looks straight. I'll do everything. Yeah. So I don't know if I would have the confidence. So I think that, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's good. But, like, definitely, I look back on that now and I'm like, okay, next time.
Yeah.
That's where the kind of little confidence has to boost a bit, because what I just really felt Star Wars had started to do is
for me anyway, is like, I had always looked at Star Wars and things like Marvel and DC and stuff as things that were kind of unattainable and not something I necessarily fit into, or people who look like me fit into. And now it kind of gave me like the buzz to be like, no, I want to do this more and I want to push it more. I really want to like, you know, there's so much proof that like our visibility works and that people want to see it. And
And we need to see it. And it's, I think there's pressure. Obviously, there's pressure. Is there pressure being a black woman in this space, trying to represent for everybody? Because at the same time, you're allowed to wear your hair how you want. And if you did fancy having a Moana wig, it shouldn't come with the pressures. If that wasn't you and you are someone that's into straight wigs and straight hair.
Yeah, that doesn't take away from...
Yeah.
No, I get... What is it? Is there a pressure? Yes and no. I feel like sometimes the pressure is something I put on myself because I know how I felt being a child and watching the lack of representation. I also know that even now, especially in this lockdown, and people in the, who are watching this, please comment on this. How many times on Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that do you watch all these shows and watch all of these white people experiencing things and barely see yourself? I mean,
so
it's
many
like,
things.
I can go, I can scroll and just be like, look at all these white people experiencing things. And I can barely see sometimes people who look like us experiencing with the same amount of depth and variety, people who look like us experiencing that, those same things. And that's, you know, at the very core, I can be angry about that. I can, you know, try and be noble about my mission and all of that, but it's just hurtful. It's just hurtful because we exist and we have a right. I mean, and like,
And then speaking on that, representation, visibility in spaces that we're not usually frequenting, you were in Lady Macbeth. And you played Anna. Can you tell everybody about a little bit about Lady Macbeth and your character?
Yeah, so Lady Macbeth was my first film. Lady Macbeth is about a young girl who marries into a really horrible relationship. And Anna is her maid who, I mean, at the beginning, you feel like you're very much on her side, the main girl's side, Catherine, but as you go in, you start to see the discrepancies of power, and it becomes a disturbing thing. She loses her mind. It was a very interesting film to watch the feedback on. The performances were sensational. Everyone did such a good job. Mm. The problem I found with the British audience, or at least the ones who I was talking to, were kind of like, this is such a feminist film, and this is so much about, you know, a woman finding her power and kind of overlooking the misuse of power. And for me, the film was very much about white feminism and the dangers of white feminism, that actually the power structures are just as skewed as a patriarchal system, as a white supremacist system. I thought that was clear as day. And so I was quite shocked sometimes when interviewers would be like, yeah, you guys could have been friends, you know, and then it all just went wrong. And it was like, wake up, people. Like,
yeah, it's not Sex in the City.
It's not Sex in the City, no. Like, the first few scenes are literally Anna giving service to her in every shape and form. There is no friendship there, never would be. So, you know, for a first film, it was very enlightening. Like, it was a beautiful thing to have as a first project, but it was also very interesting to see at least the talkative audience and their response to it, what it was like, what the perception is.
Because I got that power struggle immediately, and I think maybe being a black woman in this space and knowing that actually white feminism can be quite toxic as well, if not channeled properly. And I saw that in the film. And what was interesting, I suppose they applied colorblind casting in a way, because there's this whole thing where black people didn't exist in the the hundreds.
Yeah.
We weren't in flouncy
dresses.
Exactly. So was that when you saw the script, you're like, yes, I'm going to insert myself in there because
that one,
this is where it's...
Yeah, that was one, actually, where I was like, oh, this is mine. I felt some sort of, like... connection to the universe, and I was like, nobody else is doing this but me. It was very clear as day. I also felt it was very clever. I don't think the film would have been as effective if it had been an all-white cast. I don't think you would have gotten those same power struggles. And in one way, I go, it was so important to have that and to show that there were Black people of the time. Would I do that now? A film like that now?
Oh.
No, I wouldn't.
Why?
I think this is just out of, like, you know, you could ask me next year and I might say something different.
But, okay, fair enough.
But I think what I'm ready to see is period dramas that have people of colour in them that isn't about violence on the body, that isn't about us going through something. And I'm racking my brain to think of a way to tell a story that are about people who are Black back in the day that hasn't got anything to do with, like, direct pain. It's a very hard thing to figure out because we are so attached to our idea of, like, our history, or we've been taught and conditioned that all of our history and only our history is about slavery and pain and then struggle and servitude, that it's very hard to find something, you know, that's from that Victorian era and before that can kind of... I've got a few ideas, though.
How do you... So work is obviously still coming in.
Yeah, in a way.
And has it... Do you know where your next projects are going to be? Or is it still... Because everything's kind of shut down. Is it like you actually are getting a bit of a breather
It's a breather. So basically the two jobs that I was going to do now... Who knows? One of them was an independent film, which was like a musical. So it's going to take some time to get that funded again. Hopefully, you know, quickly it will. And then the other one was a different project that I'm not allowed to talk about. But who knows if that's going to go ahead. Don't look at me like that. So basically they all stopped. And then I started, I had finished my pilot by then and then I'd gotten this... contract through to continue. So I have a different job, just not to do with acting, which I think is quite good for me right now.
End of the effing world.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, a fantastic series.
Thanks.
And it's got, like, its cult following. It's so good. How did you hear about it? Were you a fan of it? And how did you get the request for the role?
Carmel, who's a casting director, so she had me audition for another film that's actually come out just this year called Saint Maud, which is insane. Yeah. The script is insane. She's going to be amazing, the girl who plays her. I had auditioned for that. That hadn't worked out. And then Carmel came up to me at the end of that audition. She was just like, I know season 2 is coming out for End of the Effing World, and I think you're going to be great for that part. And I was like, oh, amazing. All a year later, the audition for End of the Effing World came in. And the thing is, Bonnie as a character is really hard to pin down. Like, there's an oddness and a kind of rhythm about her that is very hard to get in an audition space because it's something you have to work on practically, and auditions don't really leave you that space to do that. So
can you tell us a bit about your character, who she is and what she does?
She's a woman who's fallen in love deeply, and because she's fallen in love deeply, she does some really crazy stuff. And she comes into the show having just left jail to take revenge on some people who might have wronged her or her loved ones.
Interesting. And is this a character that, again, is it one of those ones where a Black woman gets to shine in something that she wouldn't necessarily be considered for?
I think so. This was a highlight of trying to explore some ideas around mental health issues, around child, like, abuse as a child. I definitely felt like I got to stretch my muscles a little bit. It was actually a really hard shoot because of that. Since probably Lady Macbeth, I hadn't been required to, like, dig emotionally deep in that.
Okay.
It was a mad one, actually, yeah.
Oh, I wanted to ask about Yardi. What was that like?
Oh, that was fun. That was really fun. I was there for, like, 3 days. It was great. It was working with Idris was, like, super cool. I feel like he, like, stepped into a really cool zone, and I had only ever seen him as, like, big old actor man, and he's actually, like, really lovely and was really warm and a really great director, and I kind of want him to do another one, to be honest. I don't know what he's waiting for.
it was really good, and it was a classic story that was waiting to be told.
Yeah.
What was it like being a part? Because it's a bit of iconic British history, Yardi, that story. And how did you feel being a part of that?
I didn't know about the story until I got the script, so it was definitely like a discovery for me. It was really, it felt strangely nostalgic because it's around the time that I know my parents were young, and then suddenly I was wearing the clothes and I was like, oh my God, I probably look like how my mum looked back in the day, like in the hair and the dresses and stuff. It's really lovely to do periods. And I recently did a period for Steve McQueen, Small Axe.
Why did I not know that you were in that?
Oh, it's like, I don't think it will get like a big release, so I'm in it. It's like a nice like little part in one of the episodes. But that again was like a really lovely, just kind of tracked back.
I'm excited for that, because we definitely don't have enough shows and films and shows documenting Black history and Black existence in the UK. We really don't. It's so sparse.
And I think, you know, it's so important right now to start merging them together. A lot of the projects that I'm writing and working on are about mixing up Black actors from all different parts of the world so that we start existing in the same space at the same time. I think it's really important that, like, we have that discussion. Not that it's like, what do you feel like as someone from so-and-so, but like that, that we exist in the same space, that there's an idea of unity within a people. And I think that's really important going forward, so that we start to eliminate this kind of what feels like almost a justified but a threat that people are taking up space, and that's ultimately because there's not enough parts for any of us.
I actually love that, because I feel like, especially when I grew up, my age, whatever. I'm
Don't you dare.
I grew up last year, when I was like a child last year. But during my time growing up, during the 80s and stuff like that, it's interesting, in the 90s, how much African-American culture had an impact on me. Mm. However, there was a British Black existence, but African-Americans don't really know that. They're starting to learn about us now through Top Boy and other shows like that. Yeah. And hopefully the stories will expand. They get a wider view of us, but it would be nice to see what was going on with a Black girl or a guy in the 80s, 90s and in America simultaneously,
right?
How our cultures were similar but different, and how we come together. So
what are the, like, what baggage do we hold that they don't, and what's the baggage that they hold that we don't, and vice
versa,
and
how similar we are
similar we are, you know. And that's not just for the British and Americans, but that's for Black people in Belgium and Berlin and
Africans, Caribbeans, everything.
And I think it's time for us to really start uniting. And I think, you know, it's always, for me, I'm always reminding myself how important entertainment is as, a getaway, kind of a way of exploring ideas, but ultimately a way to see yourself and an aspirational thing. And I think it trickles down into your subconscious. And I think it's really time for us to really come together with that.
So now this is the part where it gets a little stressful, because people will try to take my crown as the games master. And those of you who were here last week, you would have known that Damson Idris, I'm calling you out, Damson. Cheated a lot. He tried to break my rules. I have rules. This, we don't have a name for this. It's called Name This TV Show Movie. Okay?
Catchy.
Whatever. The rules are as follows. I'm going to be giving you clues to films or TV shows that were made, written by a Black person, or has an all-Black cast, or stars a prominent Black actor or actress.
Okay, I'm going to be bad at this game. Okay, go on.
No, it's fine.
It's fine.
The audience can help you.
Okay. Oh, okay.
However, you lose points accordingly. So clue one, I can give you odd words from the title, right? That's clue one.
Okay.
Clue two, I can give you how many words are in the title.
Okay.
Okay. Clue three, I'll give you one word to describe the film or the TV show.
Okay.
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 Okay, and clue four, I will give you a description of one of the characters.
Okay, come on then.
Cool,
come
on. You ready?
I'm ready.
The first word I'm going to give you is Mr.
I don't know. Give me another clue.
Do you want another clue?
I'm vexed already. I'm vexed. All right.
The title has...
I'm going to stand up.
You're hot. The title has four words in it. No Googling, audience. Mister... If you Google, you get kicked out of the live. I don't know how, but you will.
Mister.
And it's got four words in the title.
Oh, no, I'm angry. This is upsetting. Go on, give me the other one.
Do you want the third clue?
Yeah.
Basketball.
Wait, what's the third clue again? That it's in...
I said the third clue is basketball.
No, that it's like, that's a word in the title.
Hold on. Wendy, acting coach, can you leave, please? She thought it was the colour purple. The word in the title is Mr. The actual word. Mr. is a character in the colour purple, not... His name is not in the... No, it's not Mr. Bean. It's four words in the title of B-Body 13. Come on.
One of the words is basketball. Mr.
No, I didn't say that. One of the words in the title is Mr.
Hit me with the four.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say someone's...
I know it. And it came from my brain.
Don't start lying. It never came with your brain.
It came from my brain. It's hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Thank you, Letitia and Sade. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Sade. What? Okay, no, I didn't get it. I'm a woman of my honour. I didn't get it. But I am pacing. I'm angry. I'm not going to win this.
So number two.
Yeah.
First word in the title is lights.
All right, what's the next one?
You don't even try. My
lights.
God.
Lights. What? Lights, camera, action. That's in
the title. I think there is a film called that, but no.
Yeah, I think there is.
Okie dokie. It has three words in the title. That's three words in the title.
In the title.
Yes.
Lights.
Ah, someone's put a clue in there. Oh, mate, you lot are trying it. Do you want a next clue?
Let me test my acting skills.
Bodyguard. Bodyguard is a clue.
Oh, I know what it bloody is. It's beyond the lights, isn't it?
I don't like you lot. Adrienne, you should have... No, it's what Adrienne said.
I do love that film. So romantic.
It's a very good film. Okay, number three. The word is...
Yes.
It.
It. What? Give me the amount of letters in the word.
What, clue two? Would you like the second clue? Okay. It's got four words in the title.
That's nah, man.
Four words.
I don't like this game. Okay, I need a bit more, babe.
Okay, cool. So you want the third clue? Third clue, Holly Amory. Word in the title.
It follows.
I said there's four words in the title.
Four words, okay.
I mean...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I need the last clue. I need it.
Do you need the last clue?
I need it.
Okay, so the last clue describes one of the characters in this thing.
Yeah.
A wide-cracking Brooklyn hip-hop b-boy. So the first thing is...
I feel like
it's
Spike Lee.
Oh.
I'm bad at this game. Like, bad at this game.
Yeah, you are. To be honest. I at least wanted you to be... Yeah, it's slightly shameful, to be honest. Absolutely. Somebody knows.
She's got a habit.
Luke, Sade. Final one.
Yeah, I'm ready.
The word in the title is skirt. No, it's not the final one. Shame, there's two more.
Give me the second clue.
Three words in the title.
Yeah. Skirt. Pink little skirt.
Pink what?
Blouse and skirt.
Oh my. All right, Sade. Do you know what? I need Sade to leave.
And I thought okay, she got my it. Brain.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Okay, final one. The words are the and the.
You're rude. Give me the second clue.
Really, you don't even try.
The and
okay,
the.
There's. Yeah.
Give me the second clue.
six words. Six words are in the title.
The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. The Devil.
Imagine you're making up films and you're counting the title as you go.
give me the third one.
Ashes is the clue.
The War of the Worlds.
No, that's actually five words. Please, caught up and carried away.
Thanks, caught up and carried away. Thanks for looking out for me, girl.
That's my show.
I'm really bad at this.
We were like, she must get this one. You know what the character description was? an obsessed, murderous former student.
I would have gotten it with that one. I would have gotten it with that one. I'm an actress, you know. I do this for a living. Wow. I'm bad at this. Wow.
I don't know what points. We'll put your points up on the leaderboard, but safe to say, you did not beat Damson.
That pisses me off, I'm not going to lie, because I like to I like to win, but, you know, you can't be good at everything.
Now it's time for audience questions. Do you listen to Soca music?
I used to. So, you know what my favourite one is? Sen, 5 sen, 10 sen,
dollar,
sen,
5 sen. But that's dollar. So obvious. Do you listen to Soca music now?
No.
I mean, it's a classic. I'm
no, that's a classic. And think you could take me for a ride? Well, I'm taking your things outside. So long, my friend, this Friday, I'll say goodbye. You know that song?
Yes, I know this one. You know, we're going to look back at this and be like, we are freaking aunties. Caught Up and Carried Away says, are you interested in comedy, Naomi?
I am, but it scares me because, like...
Why? You got time in. You're funny.
When you got to be like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I prefer comedy when it's dark, personally.
Okay.
So like, if I was to do comedy, I feel like probably something that has, that's less, like, more deadpan and, okay, and less, like,
character-based
slapstick.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'll never say never. It's just one of the ones, like I feel like drama is easier to do than comedy.
How do you deal with addressing appropriation around people you know?
This is interesting. I think... I just learned something new today, which is about, like, conflict management.
Okay.
So my dad just taught it to me, and I think it works in this, which is, it's called AID, which is action, impact, and do. So if you say to someone who's appropriating, you've done this, it makes me feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, do this. If they can engage with that, then there's someone who's worth your time, and if they can't, then they're not, and you need to let them out. I think sometimes, because of how big political ideas can be, it's very hard for people to identify it on an individual basis. But when you as a person just says, look, actually that's actually impacting me, someone you care about, it might be easier to communicate some of those bigger ideas than when you go, this is a whole structure, you know, thing, which it is. But sometimes, you know, the ideas of, like, structural racism and all of that is a very big one to unpick. So on a one-to-one, I think it's easier to be like, hey, that hurt my feelings, actually. Because ultimately, that's what it's doing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I want to meet mummy and daddy. Naomi,
listen!
Please.
I know.
I'm like...
I know. It's handy. And it's free.
Exactly. Amen. I'm going to move in. I'll be moving in.
Yeah, come.
Jesse has asked, what is your dream role? Would you want to sing in a role because you are good at singing? And to top, add on to that, you've been playing. You got a talent. This kind
What's
of
my talent? Thing.
A ukulele.
Oh, I call ukulele. Yeah. Oh God, Jess, that's a good question. I don't know. Something new, probably. Something that was okay. I'd love to all of the roles. I want to do them all. It's really hard to pick, especially I want to do something that's not been done before, so it's like hard to like visualize.
Okay, so when you were aspiring to be an actress, what role was the one that was like, oh my God, not if only you could have done it, but it was the one that you kind of maybe memorized and
I started as a theatre actress, so like my ultimate role was Lady Macbeth.
Okay, and segue, kind of.
Yeah.
A little swerve.
yeah. Lady Macbeth was like that role for me, but like in terms of film thing, but also Jess, I do want to sing in stuff, like I want to do more musicals.
We always get this question, but I guess it from a different people you get different responses. So what advice do you give to an up-and-coming actor or actress?
I think what's the best advice, there's like a balance between being persistent and being patient and being grounded in reality. because I think like in the pursuit of something you can kind of lose a sense of yourself, and like take me as a person who's like trying to come down from that now, it's better to start just being grounded than being trying to ground yourself later on in life. But I think it is a persistent thing. It's about really tapping into why you want to do it and using that as rocket fuel, because otherwise when the no's come, and like even now I'm getting bare no's. You know how many no's I've got in the last few months? Bare no's, and that's normal and it's fine. The no's are bigger and the stakes are slightly higher, but you know, that's something that I have to go, oh, another rejection, but you know what? Because of the reasons why I want to do it, I'm going to come back again better than before, and I'm going to keep doing it until they say yes. That's probably my advice.
I think that's very good, fond advice, young lady. Yeah. Very good, fond. Someone says, is acting school really necessary? Because did you go to RADA?
And I went to Central.
Central School, sorry, my bad, Central.
It depends. You know what? For me, it was necessary because I didn't know anyone in the industry. And so I had been trying to get in. Well, I was 17 when I got in, so I was pretty young. But, like, if the things I learned out of it, I could have learned on the job. But it also instilled in me a level of discipline. An idea of craft that I wouldn't have had previously. But you can find either or. I think it's just about finding what's right for you. There really is no rules to it. I don't think actors who come out of drama school are any better than those who just work on the job and vice versa. It's kind of like a take what you like, leave what you don't kind of situation with acting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you just pick up as you go along wherever you are.
Yeah. And I think I've heard like seasoned actors say, you know, they still go to acting classes and stuff because I think new characters can bring new challenges, so it'll be good to be prepared, I guess.
Yeah, and I was saying, like, I was looking at this audition today and I was like, I don't know enough. You know, I still don't know enough. I don't know sometimes what I'm doing. Sometimes it's all instinct, and that's not always safe to do on set because you can't always rely on instinct. You need technique, and sometimes I have it and sometimes I don't, and I'm still figuring all of that stuff out, you know?
When you get your script, do you need the character Bible, or do you like to bring your own stuff to it, or how does that work for you as in building a character's personality and stuff?
Depends on the writing. I leave about 30 to 40% of it until I'm on set working with the actors. But it depends on the writing. If the rhythm will give you a signal, obviously like character traits and stuff like that, but also like it's an instinct thing. Costume usually helps me.
Sure.
And then like kind of more like hippy dippy stuff. So like I did a technique like that's like a Chekhov technique, which is like about imagining different qualities in different parts of your body that like bring on a different emotion, which is like really interesting.
Oh wow.
That I use sometimes. I'm not a Stanislavski girl at all.
Okay, what does that mean, please? For those of us.
Stanislavski is like writing down the history of a character and writing down the action of every line and stuff like that, and like that's really interesting, but I don't know how to play that.
Okay, yeah,
like I can't play history when I'm in the moment.
I think someone said, what was it like working on set of Star Wars? And I was also going to ask, you know, like as an actor, you guys, the role's great, the production's great, but then they send you to the Outer Hebrides because Lady Macbeth looked cold and muddy. I was so upset for you.
That was a small budget. There was no trailers. We were in a tiny, me, Florence and Cosmo would be in this tiny like room, no radiators, one heater, all of our warm jackets on, me and Florence full corset. There were days where I would like be sitting there waiting for the scenes to go in full corset. And then be told that my scenes aren't going today and I've just spent 10 hours. And of course it vexed.
Any kind of vexed
that I will feel. Cold. And they straightened my hair as well. And obviously that's not its natural form. So whenever the little moisture did hit my hair, shum. And now they're straightening my hair four times a day. The vexness that they told me. Wow. Yeah.
Oh no. It wasn't. That's the part of being an actor. If I was an actress, I'd be like, I cannot. I only need abroad scenes, tropical lands. I can't.
Oh, I know.
That's your job, isn't it?
It's the job.
So what was it like being on set of Star Wars? I think that's the last question. What was it like being on set?
Star Wars was like the most organized, hectic space I'd ever been on. Like,
yeah,
it's like somehow everything works out, but like you're like, there's so many people that I don't understand how that's happening. And it was truly magical. I like the resources they have to make the scenes that they make. I was like blown away every single day. Like, to be honest, for me, like, that was, in terms of like a spectacle, it felt like going to Disneyland every freaking day. And then being in Disneyland, like, it was madness. Like, I'll never forget it.
Of course. Don't need to forget, because obviously we're going to get another Jenna special.
Jenna's coming back.
So this is the final section, okay?
Okay.
It's a bit mad. It's called The Process. And basically, Leo and I came up with this part of the season, the series, The Circle, as a way for viewers to understand people's craft. So sometimes we're talking to obscure people who are crew, and people don't really understand how it comes together, what their talent comes together like in real life. So we do this thing called The Process, where we get people to build out the scene of something that we're pretending to make. So this is a short film, right? That Sheila started, Damson has contributed, and now you're going to contribute to the next bit. What we want you to do is to build out the scene and flesh out the characters. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you a rundown of what's happened so far. So it's a short film. Mm-hmm. It's a psychological... Actually, do you know what? I don't even know if it's a short film anymore. That's how we started. It could be anything at this point. Mm-hmm. So it's a psychological thriller. That's the genre.
Love.
We have two black characters, a woman who's 25 named Chioma, and a male character who's 28, who's actually dead at this moment, called Isaac. Mm-hmm. So they're in the countryside in the UK in an abandoned building, which is a warehouse. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a car, an empty car in this warehouse. Mm-hmm. These two don't know each other, apparently. It's stormy outside. There's a drip that can be heard, but it's not water. So far, Chioma wakes up in this abandoned building. She has blood on her hands. Mm. A mobile phone is on the center of Isaac's chest. It rings. And this is Damson's part. A deep, posh white man's voice, kind of evilly, says, Miss Chioma, the man in front of you, there's something in his body that I need you to retrieve.
I knew it was going to be that kind of shit. Yeah.
And the man also says, I've seen everything you just did. And he says, I'm going to release the video footage unless you do what I say. So he tells her to go outside, and apparently she's going to go to jail if she doesn't follow orders. So there's other things like, you know, they both work for an organization that they owe money to. Isaac's been killed and made an example of. They've killed him and are setting her up, and now she has to follow instructions. So then when she woke up, there was a knife to the left of her. And she doesn't know that actually she's killed him, or has she? In his pocket is a blueprint and a list of names, and one of them already is ticked off, and that's Isaac, who's on the floor. So we want to, like, who is the guy? Apparently the phone's a Sony Ericsson flip phone, disposable phone, and that is it.
God damn.
So now, where do you want this story to go, bearing in mind what's happened so far?
So they're in the middle of nowhere, in the countryside, in a warehouse, and there's a car outside.
There's a car in the vicinity. We don't know whose car it is, but Trevor gets up and goes towards the car.
Yeah, and she finds that it's already open.
Okay.
And actually, the key is in the keyport, right?
In the keyhole, yeah.
Yeah, in the key thing. Thanks, I don't drive. Right. So she rolls in the car. She's panicked. Hair is askew. She's upset.
Okay.
She's rolling. Now, as she's rolling, the car. The radio turns on, and it's his voice.
Whose voice?
The white guy's voice. So she's driving, and he's on the thing. He's like, where do you think you're going? And she's like, rolling. We got a track on you. Rolling. She's driving. He says, if you don't stop driving, if you don't stop driving, I'll kill the next person.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, because of the list of names, right?
So she's got the list on her. The list.
She stops the car. He says, pull out the paper. The next name is, let's call her Patricia.
Okay, and does she know Patricia?
Yeah, she knows Patricia.
Who is Patricia? Okay.
Patricia is her brother's ex-girlfriend.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said, get out of the car. She come out the car. She go, and he said, go to the boot, innit?
So now it's turned into a Grenadian short film, yeah?
He said, go to the boot.
He says, go to the boot.
She go to the boot. She said, open the boot. She lift up the boot now. Who's in there? Rebecca.
Well, shut up. Who's Rebecca now? He says, open the boot.
Sorry,
she opens
what's her
the
name?
Boot. Patricia. Patricia.
She's got a
okay.
collar on her neck that has an electrocution thing on it. And she's drowsy. She's like, she's like drowsy.
You're killing me. Okay.
That I feel like that's a good place to take it. Patricia is going to die. But it's not up to me. It's not up
okay,
to me.
It's up to the next person.
It's up to the next
okay.
person.
Okay. I mean, that yeah. was a lot. I was stressed.
It's drama.
I was stressed.
It? It's drama.
Yeah, it's a lot of drama here. When Sheila was doing it, she's like, build the tension. I think you have successfully built
Thank
the tension.
Yeah.
Well done.
Just questions.
So, my love.
Aww, I've had so much fun.
It's been so much fun. I'm really thankful. Great to speak to you. I mean, everyone follow you on Naomi_Aki. No, you need to get it right. What's your social media, please?
Naomi Aki.
It's not underscore, is it? It's not underscore, isn't it?
I think it might be.
Come on, mate. It's one of them things.
Yeah.
Just put Naomi Aki in the things and you'll find the things.
Yeah, I'll show up.
And don't listen to her Wikipedia. She's not a Scorpio.
No.
She's a Leo.
August 22nd, people. August 22nd. I was born in 91. I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. I was born in 91. I'm so sorry.
I don't even... That's even mad. That's mad. 90s, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Thank you guys for following. Naomi, okay. It's been an absolute freaking fantastic pleasure.
It.
We will catch
love
up in the real world.
Yeah. No.
Crying out loud.
We have to.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.